why we age is because our body ends up accumulating more damage that we can repair on a daily basis. So our cells, we have mechanisms to repair DNA damage. We have DNA repair enzymes. But as we age, those mechanisms start to get deficient, and then we start to accumulate more damage that we are able to repair. What we also talk in this area of longevity, when we can achieve what we call like escape velocity, is then when we can repair damage at the same speed or rate that we are accumulating damage. In that point, we will be able to really halt the aging process and maintain our bodies at a certain biological age.
It isn't about being perfect. It's about being better. Hello, my name is Dr. Stephanie Stima, and I host expert discussions with thought leaders in all facets of health, including nutrition, fitness, hormones, stress management, performance, recovery, longevity, health span, and energy production. On this show, we discuss complex science, but then we also alchemize it into actionable everyday living. The ultimate goal with the show is to assist you in making informed decisions about your health and to catapult you into being the hero in your own life. Hello, my Betties, and welcome back to another episode of Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's me, your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. Today, I am bringing you a conversation with Carolina Riz Oliveira. She is one of the co-founders of OneSkin, and a little bit about her background. She received her PhD in immunology at the Federal University of Minas Gerais in collaboration with Rutgers University. She is an alumni of IndieBio, the world's leading biotech accelerator. And in 2016, Carolina relocated to Silicon Valley from Brazil to co-found OneSkin and to lead the development of the company's disruptive rejuvenation technologies. So what did we talk about today? Well, just looking at my notes here, so much good stuff around skin aging. We talked about the intrinsic hallmarks of aging. So things like loss of proteostasis, loss of autophagy, loss of or accumulation of cellular senescence, all of the 12 hallmarks of aging, and then extrinsic aging. So, exposure to UVA and UVB rays, pollution, etc. We talked about the hallmark, one of the central hallmarks of skin aging, which is inflammation, systemic and then localized inflammation, and what we can do about it. So we were talking about peptide therapy. We were talking about the differences between vitamin C and retinoids and retinoic acids, copper peptides, and the unique peptide that OneSkin has extracted called OS1 and what that does in the body. We talked about how some of the research studies and clinical research that her and her team have done have demonstrably shown a reduction in skin aging. And I am just so excited about this product. I'm so happy that Carolina took some time out of her day to talk to us about skin aging. So you are going to learn all about hyperpigmentation, rosacea. We're going to talk about how to avoid any more aging and hopefully reaching something that we discussed called escape velocity, which is getting ahead of the aging so that we can continue to reduce it or at least stay the same age that we are now and then look better as we do chronologically age. As you know, this year I am doubling down on skincare, and OneSkin is one of the ways that I'm getting my 40-year-old skin to behave like 20-year-old skin. Visit oneskin.co and use code BETTER at checkout to save 15%. That's oneskin.co and use code BETTER at checkout to save 15%. So please enjoy my conversation with Carolina Riz Oliveira. Essential fatty acids create better skin, hair, and nails, repair age-related damage to cells, and activate pathways that regulate sleep and mood. Fatty 15 is a different kind of essential fatty acid that helps to reverse 36 clinically relevant and age-associated changes at the cellular level, effectively protecting your cells and you against age-related breakdown. It is a stable nutrient that reduces oxidative damage and acts like an armor for your cells, keeping them young and healthy. It helps with your liver, joint health, heart health, immune health, and it activates longevity pathways like AMP kinase for smoother functioning joints, deeper sleep, healthier hair, skin, and nails. Fatty 15 is on a mission to replenish your C15 levels and restore your long-term health. You can get an additional 15% off of their 90-day subscription starter kit if you go to fatty15.com/better and use code BETTER at checkout. That's FATTY, the numbers 15.com/BETTER
and use code BETTER at checkout.
Ladies dealing with hot flashes and who are in perimenopause and menopause, I think I have found the greatest product of all time to help with this. It is called Ember Wave, and it is a gorgeous looking bracelet that you can instantly activate to help cool you off. A hot flash happens when the brain sends a false signal to say that you're too hot. With a push of a button, the Ember Wave bracelet helps women with hot flashes cool off, fall asleep, and stay asleep. There's also this fall asleep mode that was designed to relieve the distress of hot flashes overnight. It uses gradual, slow waves of cooling to help your body gently relax into a slumber. I absolutely love this for my perimenopausal and menopausal women, for the hot flashes and then the shivering that happens afterwards, because there's also a heat function for you to heat yourself up. Go to emberlabs.com and use Dr. Stephanie for 15% off of the Ember Wave 2. It is a bracelet. I got it in the rose gold and I love it. Or you can click on the show notes, the link in the show notes, and the discount will be automatically applied when you click the link. All right. And we are live. Carolina Reis Oliveira, very excited to welcome you to the Better Show for a discussion on skin health today.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me, Dr. Stephanie. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
Wonderful. And I wanted to have you on because I actually just did a post on this around skin health and skin aging. This is something that our perimenopausal and menopausal women definitely notice. When you move into your 40s and your 50s, we start to notice things like crepier skin, jowls, fine lines and wrinkles. Things are not as, you know, as plump as they once were. And I'm very impressed with the science and the research and the development of the product with OneSkin. And I wanted to speak to you to talk about skin aging. What are some of the mechanisms for it? Why does our skin age? And then, of course, strategies that we can be thinking about as we are moving through life to help us put our best face forward. So I thought we might start with just a general overview in terms of what the mechanisms of aging are. I know that there are 12 defined, you know, reasons why the whole body ages, and maybe we can zoom in a little bit on skin health. So what are some of the mechanisms of aging in skin, and then how is that impacting the function and the appearance of our skin?
Yeah, definitely. So if you can zoom out and simplify the aging process, aging is nothing more than an accumulation of damage. Why we age is because our body ends up accumulating more damage that we can repair on a daily basis. So our cells, we have mechanisms to repair DNA damage. We have DNA repair enzymes. But as we age, those mechanisms start to get deficient, and then we start to accumulate more damage that we are able to repair. What we also talk in this area of longevity, when we can achieve what we call like escape velocity, is then when we can repair damage at the same speed or rate that we are accumulating damage. In that point, we will be able to really halt the aging process and maintain our bodies at a certain biological age, which is really exciting. But going more focused on the skin, two main mechanisms are behind the skin aging. What we call intrinsic aging, that's basically the internal aging process. Our cells go through cellular division, and during this process, we end up, you know, accumulating damage, which leads to aging. And then there are also the in this intrinsic aging, we also have genetics involved, and it's basically the speed of aging, the natural aging. And then we have the extrinsic aging, that's what it's externally affecting our aging process. So for the skin, this is very relevant because we know that more than 90% of extrinsic aging is driven by UV damage. So we know that the sun damage is one of the main drivers of skin aging. But on top of sun damage, we have other stressors like pollutions, other environmental stresses that can affect the skin aging process as well. And there are several ways that we can prevent and try to counteract this process. One of the main ones is basically trying to protect your skin against sun damage. That's by using like sunscreen or sunblock. we can talk a little bit more the different types of, you know, sunscreens that are out there. But if there is like one takeaway that everyone should know leaving this episode, is like use sunblock every day, because that's the most effective thing for your skin to decelerate the aging process.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's sort of divide our conversation both in terms of intrinsic aging and extrinsic. So I'm with you. I'm team sunscreen. I've had one of my friends, he's a plastic surgeon, he's been on the show as well. And we sort of circle in maybe some whole, like some similar holistic circles. And there are some people who are vehemently against sunscreen because they believe that, you know, the more melanin that you can produce, you know, that is the natural sort of defense against sun damage, I guess you can say. However, I beg to differ. I think that you can do more, and we'll talk about UVA and UVB rays in a moment. But I want to come to intrinsic aging. So you mentioned genetics. So one of the things that we know as we age, we've had Dr. David Sinclair on the show as well, and he talked about genomic instability and the Horvath clock and telomere attrition and accumulation of senescent cells and loss of proteostasis, all of these different hallmarks of, and like I'm sort of listing out the 12, you know, listed out maybe five of the 12 hallmarks of aging. So let's talk a little bit about maybe each of those in kind, or if there's any of them that are very specific to skin aging in particular, let's talk a little bit about what is happening there. So senescent cells, you know, the accumulation of senescent cells, and you mentioned escape velocity, which is a term that I hear more and more around. If we can sort of either equivocate or surpass or get ahead of the aging, let's say, from some of those intrinsic factors that I just mentioned, then we can either stay the same age or start to sort of Benjamin Button it, right? So let's talk about some of the intrinsic factors that you see that are most problematic when it comes to the health and well-being of our skin.
Yeah, it's really hard to necessarily pick one that's more important. I think all of them, they are interconnected. So for example, when you have genomic instability, what happens is that you lose the enzymes that were supporting the genomic stability, that they go to repair DNA damage, and that genomic instability is basically causing the cell to lose its identity, and then when it's becoming dysregulated and leads to aging. So we know that the loss of, you know, proteostasis, this will lead to more accumulation of junk inside the cell, right? Because proteostasis is basically recycling the proteins that are inside the cells, and we need to clean up them in order to your cells to continue to function well. So I think all of them in the end are very important. How we like to think about senescent cells is that this cellular senescence is a central hallmark of aging. So no matter what process it's more prominent, in the end, they will lead to a larger accumulation of senescent cells, because senescent cells are basically cells that are highly damaged. And at certain point, they stop dividing, because if they continue to divide, they could become a tumor, which is obviously not good for our body. So it's a mechanism of defense from our body. The problem with senescent cells is when they accumulate, they start secreting inflammatory signals that induce the healthy cells around to age faster. So we call them zombie cells, because they are there, but they are not functional. But they are basically spreading, you know, bad vibes around. Also, we compare them with a bad apple in a bunch, because again, one senescent cell spoils the good cells around. And the difference with age is that when we are younger, our bodies is able to recognize and clear out those senescent cells. Our immune system does that. When we get old, our immune system also gets deficient, and they build up in our tissues. So the buildup of senescent cells is basically leading to this accelerated aging process because of the inflammatory signals that the senescent cells are secreting. And the interesting strategy around senescent cells, which can be a little trickier for other of the hallmarks, is that we can specifically target and eliminate those senescent cells from our tissues in a way that if we can clear them out, we are making room for the healthy cells to proliferate, to replicate, and then we are targeting very specifically what is mainly driving aging, and we are not disturbing the healthy cells. I think a lot of the other, and we can talk more later about, you know, retinols and how those other anti-aging ingredients work, is that they are not specifically targeting the problematic cells. They are basically affecting the good and the bad cells. So by targeting senescent cells, there are many, many studies showing that's a very effective rejuvenation strategy, that we can actually bring our tissues and even a whole organism to a younger state that behaves and looks like younger.
Okay, so just the nerd in me needs to know what the mechanism of action there. So is that, are we thinking about senolytics that are like topically applied? Are we thinking about inducing autophagy, which we know sort of slows down with age? Yeah. I mean, there's many things that, you know, yes, how you can elicit autophagy. There's many ways: exercising, temperature manipulation, caloric restriction, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we know that as we get older, that sort of autophagy, that process of lysosomal clearance becomes more disabled. So is it like an exogenous, like it's a topical thing that we're talking about to help with, tell me what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are several ways. What one skin is working specifically is a topical solution, like a topical cream that contains a peptide that we found to be able to decrease the burden of senescent cells in the skin. And I can explain more how we found this peptide. But everything that you said in terms of exercise, in terms of your diet, this can also help autophagy in a way that you are clearing out some of those senescent cells. And there is also this difference between what we call a senomorphic molecule and a senolytic. So a senolytic compound is basically intended to induce the apoptosis, or the death of the senescent cells. So you basically kill those cells. The main problem of senolytics is that it's very hard to find very specific senolytics that don't affect the non-senescent cells. Because if they affect the non-senescent cells, the healthy cells, we are causing some toxicity that we don't want.
You're throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes, exactly. The good part of the senomorphics is that they are safer in a way that the senomorphics basically work by inhibiting the secretion of the inflammatory molecules that the senescent cells work. So the senescent cells are still there, but they are not producing those detrimental factors that are basically inducing the cells around to age faster. So it's a way that it's safer because it's not affecting the healthy cells, and you are basically neutralizing the main detrimental factors of the senescent cells. That's what they secrete, like the inflammation that they produce.
So we're reducing systemic inflammation, which is obviously a hallmark of aging. Are we also, with these senomorphic cells, inducing, or are we programming those zombie cells for cell death? Are we labeling them for cellular apoptosis or no?
The senomorphic compound, or whatever molecule you're using as a senomorph. So for example, rapamycin is considered like a senomorphic. They are not intended to induce the apoptosis of the senescent cell. They're intended to reduce the secretion of the inflammatory signals. The senolytics, and there are several drugs out there that are in clinical trials, they are designed to induce the apoptosis of senescent cells. So as you said, like the senomorphic will affect the inflammation that the senescent cells are producing, will decrease the whole burden of inflammation in a specific tissue or in your whole body, depending where you're applying that compound or that molecule.
Okay, so you mentioned the peptide that you and your team have extracted, and tell me a little bit about how, and I'm assuming that this is a senomorphic cell then. So, it has senomorphic actions, right, and effect. So we're reducing that inflammation that's happening in the skin. So tell us a little bit about that peptide. The product is called OS1. So tell me what OS1 stands for. How did you come to discover this peptide, and what are some of the benefits that it has?
Yeah. So once we understood that targeting senescent cells in the skin was one of the most effective ways that we could utilize to promote skin rejuvenation, we set ourselves to search new molecules that had this effect of targeting senescent cells. So we start testing peptides, because peptides is already a molecule that's used in several cosmetics. For those that who are not familiar, peptides is basically chain of amino acids that can have like a specific effect inside the cell. They can act as a messenger, and they can basically tell the cell how the cell should act in a better or, in a worse way. In our case, obviously, we're looking for a positive effect. So we were testing peptides in skin cells that are highly senescent cells, and we were measuring which peptide could reduce the number of senescent cells. And we spent 3-4 years just testing peptide. We tested nearly 900 peptides before we got to OS1. And OS1 was the peptide that had the greatest ability to reduce the burden of senescent cells almost to 50% in skin models that we test in the lab. And by reducing the amount of those senescent cells, the healthy cells, the healthy skin cells proliferate and they start producing more collagen again. So they start producing more collagen, more hyaluronic acid. We also see a decrease in the genes that are associated with aging, such as like P16 and also inflammatory genes. And then the end result is that this is going to lead to a thicker epidermal layer, which also leads to a stronger skin barrier. So the whole purpose of One Skin is really to improve the healthier skin. We know that our skin, it's not only a canvas, it's an organ, it's a functional organ that's designed to protect our body. And the skin barrier is the most important function of the skin. And we know that strengthening the skin barrier is the best way to actually improve your skin health. If your skin barrier is strong, you are protecting your skin and your whole body against pathogens, against several environmental stressors. And that's the best way that you can keep your skin functioning well and also looking better. So once we found this peptide, we went through a series of tests to validate it. First, the safety. So this is a novel peptide, and we want to make sure that it wouldn't cause any toxicity, any mutagenesis, and everything was very clear and clean. So once we cleared that, we were testing this peptide in skins in the lab that we can either grow skins and replicate the skin aging. And then by applying the peptide, we can measure how much you are reversing the age of the skin. So you know about Horvath's clock, that we can measure the biological age of our body. Basically, what One Skin also developed is an algorithm that can measure the biological age of the skin. So, for example, we can build the skin in the lab and we can quantify the age. And let's say that the age is like 50 years old. Then we test the peptide. We can see in how many years the peptide is reversing the age of the skin. And we found that in these lab conditions, we could reverse 2.5 years the age of the skin over a course of 5 days, which is very exciting because it's the first time that we are actually able to show that it is possible to reverse the age of the skin. And from there, we developed this topical cream that we are now commercializing, but we are also running clinical studies in humans that we are collecting biopsies to be able to measure in humans how much we can reverse the aging using this product, using this topical application.
So the skin that you were testing, this was human skin that you were testing in the lab.
Yeah.
And when you said in 5 days, you can reduce the biological age of the skin by 2.5 years. How are you quantifying 2.5 years? Is that the rate of cell turnover? Is that the amount of collagen that they're now producing? Is that the thickness of the epidermis that you had mentioned? How do you quantify the age is 2.5 years?
Yeah, younger? That's a great question. So we built this algorithm that's basically measuring the change in the methylation profile of the skin, similar to Horvath. So what Horvath did was to build this algorithm that used the tissues from the whole body. And our algorithm was trained only with skin samples. So we know how a neonatal skin behaves, and we know how a very old skin behaves. And we can map the differences in the epigenetics. And then basically we can create this algorithm that can read the DNA of the skin or the methylation and quantify the age and even like the change in this age when we treat the skin with a given molecule.
That's fabulous. And then what happens if you use it beyond 5 days? Is that sort of the big, we see like that big, well, it's not linear, like two and a half years in 5 days is, you know, astronomically amazing. But what happens, have you done longer term studies? So beyond 5 days, what are some of the changes that you might see at, let's say 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12, something like that, like a longer term use?
Yeah. So in the lab, we have a limitation in how long we can keep the skins in the Petri dish. After like 5 days or a week, they start basically to die, to degenerate. So we have just this time frame to evaluate the effects. That's why now we are doing these studies in humans. So we already did a pilot with a very small cohort that was only 10 participants, and we followed them for 12 months. And over 12 months, we could see an average reduction in 3.6 years in humans. So we collect biopsies and we measure that. We believe that we can see significant decrease in 6 months. So we repeated this study, just concluded recently, and we're still analyzing the data. With a larger cohort, we have like 30 participants, and we hope to see that we can decrease the age of human skins in humans over 6 months of using the product.
That's so exciting. And even, you know, the thing that I think excites me the most, obviously reducing inflammation is very important and cell turnover and all of that. But the thickening of the epidermal layer for me is very interesting, because one of the things that we know in perimenopause, as we start to see declining levels of estrogen and all of our hormones, the skin actually becomes thinner, right? It becomes more opaque. Mm-hmm. And so that thickening of the epidermal layer, I think, is very important, because that's when you start to see like the fine lines and wrinkles. And I remember looking at my grandmother and just like see-through skin, you know, you could see the blood, but you could see everything underneath. So that I think is wonderful. And I think that for most women who are in their 40s that are starting to notice maybe a little bit more crepiness, a little bit more fine lines and wrinkles, that thickening of the is going to improve those fine lines as well. Would you agree?
Definitely. So it's all correlated. As we increase more collagen, as you basically bring the skin to that homeostasis state in which the skin is able to produce that thicker epidermal layer and leading to a stronger skin barrier, that's definitely affect how it's smooth and how, you know, more firm or supple your skin is. So we can talk about like the body lotion, but we developed this body product, and one of the main results is that we can see that it increases the epidermal layer thickness, and that's why it's helping so many people, not only with crepey skin, but also the skin when someone gets older gets very thin and very fragile and tends to tear very easily. And by strengthening this epidermal layer, we are basically avoiding those processes that are very uncomfortable, right, for old people when your skin starts to bruise all the time or to tear all the time. So we have amazing testimonials from our customers that people used to use Band-Aids over their skin on their arms. And by using OS1 Body, they could basically recover like the strength of the skin, and they didn't need those Band-Aids anymore. The skin were not tearing as they used to be. And so really, really excited to see this impact beyond obviously, you know, just the appearance of, you know, the skin. But I agree. I think for, you know, menopause, perimenopause or postmenopause, this is definitely a very important factor that we can counteract with, you know, peptides that work by targeting senescent cells.
Yeah. And when I think of the body as a whole, like there are different areas that are just naturally thinner than others, right? So I wanted to talk to you about the difference between like the skin under the eyes is much more delicate than like the rest of the face. Even like the décolletage area, like the area sort of in the chest, tends to be thinner.
Yeah.
The other area that I have, you know, women will complain about is their knees, right? So like the skin around the knees kind of thing. So there's different almost environments and even like microbiome environments in the skin. Like, you know, if you're in the armpit or the bottom of the foot or the face or, you know, neck. Let's talk a little bit about how we can think about, for example, I've heard in the past, oh, you should just never bother with eye creams. Like they don't do anything. It's just a waste of money. But I always have noticed myself that, you know, the skin under my eyes is just thinner. So why wouldn't we require something special for, you know, skin that's thinner? So can you talk a little bit about maybe under the eyes, the neck and chest area, knees, that kind of thing, where the skin tends to be a little bit, the knees are a little different because it tends to be a little bit more, I don't know, wrinkly, I guess, because, you know, you're bending and straightening the knee all the time.
That's a very good point. And that's also what led us to develop specific products. So first we started with the face moisturizer that contains the peptide. And right after we thought about, you know, the skin of your body, obviously we can't neglect like 97% of our skin that is the skin that's covering our body. And the difference is that your body will be less exposed to sun damage than your face. Obviously, your neck and décolleté can be more exposed. That's why a lot of times you're going to see more aging on your décolleté or your arms or hands because they are more exposed.
Oh, yeah, the back of the hand is another spot. Yes. Another thin.
So knowing that, we decided to create this body lotion that also contains the peptide that's able to target senescent cells in your whole body and really has this amazing effect of increasing the epidermal thickness, decreasing inflammation, you know, soothing and calming your skin. But for air, so this is has a lower concentration of the peptide because our body, again, is not as exposed to damage as our face. But obviously, if you think about your, you know, décolleté or your hands, maybe you still need a little bit more help. So you could either use the face product that's a little more concentrated for those areas as well. The very interesting part about the eye, and you're totally right, the skin around our eyes is 5 times thinner than the skin around our face. And when we measure the biological age of the skin just under or above your eyes, it's 20 to 30 years older than the skin around your temples. It's like shocking.
Why is that? Why is it so much older? It's because of the thinness.
It's much thinner. Also, it's moving all the time. So I think it's similar to what happens with your knees. So the more that you are, you know, using that, I would say, you know, skin or muscle, you end up like kind of, you know, wearing, tearing. But so knowing that, we knew that we needed to develop like a specific formulation to target the skin around our eyes. So what we did, first we got eyelid samples of like people that do bleft surgeries, and we cultured those eyelids in the lab, and we were testing like very specific formulations to target the skin around our eyes. And we increased the concentration of the peptide. So the peptide on the eye cream, it's a higher concentration than the product on our face. So it's the most potent formula that we have. And the clinical studies that we did with the eye products are the ones that have like the strongest data as well in terms of increasing elasticity around, if I'm not mistaken, like 24%, increasing hydration like 30. Really very interesting. We saw one effect on the eyelids that start to droop over time, that a lot of the participants seemed that they did like a surgery. It was completely smooth and really like gave that lifting.
It's like they've had bleft.
Yeah,
they've
exactly.
had a bleft or a plastic.
That lifting effect. So we were very excited when we saw this on the eyelids, because we're not even like, usually we're looking around, you know, under eyes and crow's feet, but the eyelid effect was really interesting. So knowing that, we are always thinking how we can be more effective by designing products that are specific to those specific areas. And I agree. I think there are areas that we need more protection. And for example, if your area of most concern is your neck or your chest, I would use the eye cream on your neck or on your chest because it's the strongest.
Because it has the highest concentration.
Exactly.
You were mentioning before, when you were looking at skin samples in the lab, that you were able to reduce the biological age of the skin in 5 days by 2.5 years. Did you see something similar with the eye cream or the eyelids?
Yeah, we have not done the same study with the eyelids. It's actually a good reminder, we can definitely repeat those studies. This biological age measurement is a very expensive experiment because we need to kind of sequence the methylation, but I think it's definitely worth testing. We will only be able to do this problem in the lab because in humans it's really hard to get a biopsy of your eyes.
But sure, yeah, yeah. Unless you have a good plastic surgeon who's just doing bluffs.
Yeah,
all the time.
Exactly.
You just grab the extra stamp.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of the Bio Optimizers Magnesium Breakthrough. It has 7 forms of magnesium, which is going to help to transform your stress and your performance and your recovery and your sleep to the next level. I'm often asked, like, well, what are the types of magnesium we should be looking for? So there's magnesium chelate and citrate and bisglycinate and malate, sucrosomial, taurate, and orotate. They have various effects on the body. Bisglycinate, probably the most bioavailable and most absorbable. Malate, it's found naturally in fruits, helps with migraines. Chronic pain has been shown to help improve depression. Magnesium citrate helps with arterial stiffness, helps with maintaining a healthy weight. Magnesium chelate is important for muscle building, recovery, and health. The list goes on and on. You're basically getting them all in one supplement. Each supplement itself is 500 milligrams of magnesium, which I feel is such a great dosage as a great baseline for most women. I have found a beautiful medium of actually cycling my magnesium. So I actually will take 1 or 2 of these. So I'm either getting 500 milligrams or up to 1 gram of magnesium, depending on where I am in my cycle. So head on over to biooptimizers.com/better
and use code better
for 10% off of any order, but make sure that the magnesium breakthrough is in your cart.
Let's talk about some of the other, you know, things that people notice when they age. I can tell you myself, after spending too many summers in the Italian and Greek and Portuguese sun, you know, I have the like little bit of hyperpigmentation, mm-hmm. like a little bit of spotting. They're not freckles. I guess they are. Are they freckles? I don't know. It's just like sunspots. Yeah. I have them on my cheekbones. So aging spots, hyperpigmentation. What is happening here? And is there a way that we can reverse that as well? Like, are you able to sort of remove that excess pigment that has been deposited from sun damage?
Yeah, I think one of the main factors behind the hyperpigmentation is a dysregulation on melanin deposition. So, and one of the reasons why it dysregulates, it's basically inflammation. When you have inflammation in your tissue, you are basically disturbing the regular processes of the cell to produce melanin and kind of to distribute among the cells around them, because it's not in the end the accumulation of like melanins in certain spots is because they are not distributing well the melanin that they are producing. So it's a very interesting process that the melanocytes, the cells that produce the melanin, communicates with the keratinocytes that are around. And when this communication is disturbed, then there is this accumulation in certain areas causing the dark spots. And the main reason why it disturbs is inflammation. So what we see with the OS1 peptide, and we've done some experiments in vitro showing that OS1 can decrease the intrinsic production of melanin, so the melanin that's produced inside the melanocytes, and also the extrinsic, what is really expelled out of the cell, because again, this will be associated with, you know, the dark spots. And by decreasing these, both like intrinsic and the extrinsic, you know, quantity of melanin, we are able to improve the tone of the skin, the overall appearance of dark spots and hyperpigmentation. So in the end, if I were to simplify, obviously we know that there are several hormone play importance in this process that with the peptide is hard to control. But in terms of like the sun damage that's causing degradation of, you know, the cells and inflammation, these we can counteract with the peptide. And again, this is also associated with the presence of senescent cells that are contributing to inflammation and contributing to this dysregulation. But it's one of the most challenging, I would say, parts of the aging process is actually to recover this homeostasis in the melanin production in a way that you avoid that. But it's possible to reverse. I think not only, you know, a peptide like ours can help, but obviously some products that can help, like exfoliating or improving cell renew. In this case, some acids or retinols can be also effective to clear up or at least diminish the appearance of dark spots.
That was my next question, actually, is how does this square up with, I've heard BHAs and AHAs should be used for hyperpigmentation, retinols, retinoids, you know, vitamin, I guess, derivatives of vitamin A.
Yeah.
So using a BHA or an AHA, we'll just stick with the acids for a moment. Mm-hmm. How does that compare to OS1 or the peptide that we're talking about in terms of reducing inflammation? Do we use them together? Mm-hmm. And maybe a third question is the acids doing the same thing that you've described insofar as reducing the biological age? Because you can sort of remove a layer of the skin, which is kind of what my understanding is of what the acid is sort of doing. But you're going to, underneath that, you're just still going to have that disruption, like that disrupted melanin deposition pattern. Yeah. So are you actually fixing it, or are you just sort of taking off a layer of skin? So that's my three-prong question. There's a lot of questions in there, but that's, so do we use, so the first thing is, like, do we use the acids in conjunction with this peptide, the OS1 peptide, and are they doing the same thing?
Yeah, they are not doing the same thing, but you should use them in conjunctions because they are basically complementary mechanisms. So as you said, you're completely right. Like the acids, they'll produce, they will induce this kind of exfoliation or cell renew of the skin, the upper layers of the skin. So you're basically just cell renewing the epidermal layer that is the layer that contains the melanocytes and the keratinocytes. So that's why when you promote that cell renew, you can basically produce new cells that are more stable on the melanin production and basically clear or diminish the ones that were already dysregulated on the melanin production. But if you don't continue to treat with OS1 the underneath cause of inflammation, you are just like targeting the symptoms. You are not, you know, targeting the cause. So in the end, it's very important to add both or to combine both because they complement each other. Also, a lot of times, many people are sensitive to, you know, exfoliators or acids. So our product helps like calming and soothing the skin and decreasing the inflammation. So it is a way that you are not also disturbing your skin barrier too much or promoting a lot of irritation in your skin, which you also don't want, like, in the long term. So that's basically how the acids work. And retinol, I think it's just a version that's a little stronger in terms of being able to renew even faster, because with retinol, you can really see your skin like peeling off in the...
Oh, so I feel like a snake when I wear I don't use it that often because what happens is it dries out my skin and then I can literally, I feel like I can peel off my face.
I used to be peeling all the time. Before I started, you know, studying skin aging, I had acne when I was younger. So I was used to retinol and be peeling and be red. And then once like I got to my 25, 26, I continued to use for anti-aging. And I was peeling all the time and I was thinking, okay, I'm just getting younger. But when we treated skins in the lab with retinol, what we realized is that during that acute phase that you are peeling and that you are red, you are actually accelerating aging for a certain period of time, because the genes associated with aging, they go up, and the genes associated with inflammation, they also go up. I know, was very shocking. Like, I was like, why am I using this product that's supposed to be anti-aging? I can see like the genes that are supposed to, you know, be decreasing, they are increasing. But what I understand, and we understand as a scientist, that you can go through that acute phase and those genes can go down again. So it's basically kind of causing stress so your skin can get, you know, fresher and looking younger again. I think it's okay if you can tolerate that for just like a few days, but you don't want to go through that process over and over again. If you are a person that can't tolerate retinol, that is always red or inflamed or irritated, I don't recommend. I think there are alternatives. I think products like ours can really promote like very similar effects without the downsides of retinol. For people that are okay with retinol, if you combine those together, I think you can even optimize your results. Today I don't use retinol anymore. Very rarely I use in, you know, around, you know, CrossFit here or at some areas that I feel that I have a little more lines. But I'm never in that state that I'm peeling or I'm red again. I'm just like, okay, what is the healthy balance here that maybe I can induce a little bit more cell renewal, but without getting to that inflammatory state that I know that's not good for the skin.
There was, which country in Europe just banned?
UK. UK.
Was it the UK? Mm-hmm. They just banned, was it tretinoin that they just banned?
Banned any concentration of product that's 0.3%, above 0.3% of retinol. So, and only you can get above 0.3% only if you have prescription, which I think is a very important sign because Europe is always ahead of us in terms of safety, right? They are always banning the ingredients that can compromise our health. And I think it's a very important sign that, okay, in the US, we saw this movement that the higher strength of retinol was the better. Everyone was looking for, you know, which one is the strongest one. And I think there is a limit there that we needed to be aware of because you can, when you have very strong retinoic acid on your skin, you are basically removing your skin barrier because all of those cells that are being cycled, they are exposing your skin for a certain period of time. That's why your skin gets way more sensitive to the sun because you are definitely more exposed. Again, for some people, you can recover and you can build again your skin barrier, but some people don't have the same ability. So in the end, I'm all in favor of like balance of finding, you know, maybe a combination that doesn't irritate your skin, but being mindful of how your skin reacts to those products because your skin is smart. Like if it's inflamed and if it's irritated, it's probably because it's not good for you.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice. And I've heard also for reducing inflammation and reactive oxygen species that using like a topical with vitamin C is very important. How does this contrast, if at all, or are they complementary to the OS1 peptide?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on vitamin C?
Yeah, the way that vitamin C or antioxidant works is basically by neutralizing the free radicals. And free radicals are caused, again, sun damage and several stresses can cause free radicals. If you have a lot of free radicals inside your cell, they can cause DNA damage. If they cause DNA damage, you are getting to more senescent cells. So basically, our peptide works on the far end of like, if you have DNA damage, our cells will be more effective in repairing DNA damage. The antioxidants work on the first phase that, okay, if we have free radicals, let's neutralize those free radicals so they don't get to cause DNA damage in the skin. So in the end, they are complementary, and we have antioxidants in our formulas, mainly on our sunscreen that we launched, like a mineral sunscreen that contains the peptide, but also have 5 powerful antioxidants, including a more stable form of vitamin C, because vitamin C is very tricky. If you don't have the stable formula, they can oxidize very easily. And then if you put an oxidized vitamin C on your face, you're probably causing more damage than good to your skin. So it's very important to know if, you know, the colors change, if it's getting a little darker, then it's probably already not good to
use. And how is it stored too? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes vitamin C comes in like a clear bottle.
Exactly. It should be like a darker bottle, completely, you know, protect against the light. But I think it's really important when you have like those antioxidants to really decrease the amount of free radicals that are in your skin cells that can cause those DNA damage.
Okay, so we want, so in your sunscreen, by the way, I use the tinted sunscreen. I love it.
It just
gives me like a little bit of color. Uh-huh. You know, I'm going to the gym, yeah, and I just put it on and just like evens up my skin tone a little bit. Actually, before I ask you about sunscreen, let me ask you about rosacea, because this is not something that I deal with, but I know that a lot of women in their 40s and 50s do see this sort of broken capillaries and like the redness sort of around the nose and the cheek area. What is causing that? And again, is the peptide that we're talking about today, the OS1 peptide, going to help with remediating the appearance of that? Like what is that, just broken capillaries opening up onto the surface? Is that from the retinoic acid? Like why is that happening?
Yeah, it's kind of a very complex combination of mechanisms that leads to a weaker skin barrier. So that's why your capillaries are more visible, because your skin barrier or like your epidermal layer gets thinner. And it also inflames or gets like irritated very easily. So it's usually in the end that you have like a weaker skin barrier and you have either like a more sensitive skin, or for some reason you are getting more sensitive over time. So our product was not specifically designed to target rosacea. It can help. We have several customers that have shared that they had decreased redness. It has improved the overall like tone and strength of the skin. But for those that have like a more, I would say, severe case of rosacea, I would recommend talk to a dermatologist, because there are other products and other ingredients that can be more helpful as well. But the peptide helps on basically decreasing the inflammation. That's very clear on rosacea patients.
Okay, great. All right, let's talk about sunscreen. As I was mentioning before, there are different types of sunscreens. There's like mineral-based, there's ones that just like reflect the sun.
Yeah.
There's the chemical sunscreens. Talk a little bit about the formulation of the sunscreen that you use and that I use, the tinted. I know there's an untinted one, but yeah, I just really love the tinted.
I love the tinted too.
The untinted's fine as well, but yeah, the tinted is, it just gives you, pulls it all together for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, really, it gives you like a little glow and it smooths yeah out like the tone, and it doesn't give you a lot of coverage, but it just...
Yeah, it looks like skin.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like skin.
Tell us, what kind of sunscreen are we talking about here? Is this a mineral based? Is it going to be... Tell us why you chose the formulation that you did with the sunscreen.
Yeah, so there are two main types, the chemical base and the mineral base. The chemical base is made of some chemicals that will penetrate the skin and will absorb the UV light, so it doesn't allow the UV light to cause damage. Those are not, they have some safety concerns, so they can be absorbed by, you know, your skin, get your bloodstream. So We have seen a lot of news and kind of discussions around that. And even for people with sensitive skin, the mineral sunscreen, it's safer. It's more gentle to your skin. So our is a non-nano, because it's also important. Like, we don't want a mineral sunscreen penetrating your skin. So non-nano zinc oxide sunscreen. So basically creates this physical barrier that sits on top of your skin and will absorb the UV light, the UV rays, so that doesn't, you know, compromise your skin. And the main challenge with mineral sunscreens in the past is that it was very hard to develop a formulation that would not leave a white cast, that would spread really right well. So finally, we got there. So our formulation, it feels like a moisturizer, right? To me, it's like a second layer of a moisturizer on your skin. Mm. So the shield, OS1 shield, so it also contains the peptide. So we'll also not only prevent the UV damage, but it can also help repairing some past damage, because the peptide is going inside the cells and activating those DNA repair pathways. So making sure that we are repairing the damage that is already there. And then the third part of this sunscreen, again, is the antioxidants that we have. We have 5 antioxidants, including vitamin C, green tea, acai extract, and it's a very potent blend of those antioxidants that can neutralize those free radicals and really offer like three layers of, you know, benefits to the skin.
Whenever I'm looking at quality sunscreen, I often will look to what they're doing in Australia. In Australia, of course, it's like they have a very strong sun.
Yeah.
And the rates of skin cancer in Australia are, you know, when we look at it, much higher than they are other places. So, and what I often find is the best kind of sunscreen that's sold in Australia typically is mineral based, as you're saying. Yeah. So it's providing that physical block. So there's no absorption, et cetera. And I agree with you. A lot of mineral sunscreens, it's hard to get it right because you do end up looking like a, you know, like a, like a lifeguard, you know, like with the big white streaks, and it doesn't, it pile, like it pills and it doesn't actually absorb into the skin. Do we put that also on, actually I have two questions for you. So you mentioned the antioxidants that are in there. You said acai and vitamin C and all of that. What are your thoughts on, and maybe it's, it might be too early to know about this, but I keep hearing about copper. I keep hearing about copper. I believe the peptide is, oh gosh, what's the letter suit? It's GK.
Yeah. GHK. Yeah.
Yes. What are your thoughts on it? Or is it, do you not convinced from the studies, convinced, not sure?
Yeah, we did test this peptide in the lab. It is supposed to increase collagen. Unfortunately, in our hands, we didn't see that effect. I think it did help like cell proliferation, cell renewal, but we couldn't see the increase in collagen that most people claim about this. So
So you weren't you weren't compelled.
No,
like you could see something, but it wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
And what about lips? So lips, that's the other sort of area of the skin, if you will, that's a little bit distinct on the, you know, on the face. Do we put this? Do we put the sunscreen on the lips as well?
I think we should have SPF on our lips. I think it needs to be a different formulation because it needs to be a little bit more hydrating. Because if you apply the same, I tried already, it doesn't have like a, you know, a great feeling. So you're kind of touching in some of the new products that we are developing. We are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. We are working on a lip treatment, both like a lip mask that can really hydrate and repair your skin cells in the lip overnight, and also a lip treatment with SPF that you can wear during the day. That actually is hydrating and it feels good because it's another challenge to have a mineral and, you know, a lip treatment with SPF that's like mineral and not a chemical. But it's an important area that one that we neglect in terms of, you know, sun protection. And it's one of the areas of our face that shows the sign of aging faster.
Right.
Yeah. So people, there are studies showing that people can tell your age based on how your lips look. And obviously, we know that, you know, everyone is kind of, you know, all about, you know, lip fillings. And I think protecting the, you know, the aging process in your lip is also very important. And that's one of the things that we are working on.
Oh, well, that's very exciting. I'm glad I asked them because one of my questions is, what are some of the next products that you're coming out with? What are the next SKUs that you're working on? Lips should be, I think that's such a natural extension because I personally, I have like just naturally full lips, but they also get chapped. Mm-hmm. They also get chapped so damn easily. It doesn't matter how much water I'm drinking. They're always chapped and it's so annoying. And I would prefer, I mean, I have Vaseline, but I would just prefer not to use it if I can. And there are other sort of lip treatments that I found that kind of work, but you know, within a day or two, it's like back to the same old, same old. So I'm very excited about that. So in that vein, so lips or lip treatments are, you know, another product that you're working on developing. What else are you, are there other things that you guys are very excited about and that you're working on?
Yeah. Another thing is a body SPF that's also mineral because again, we need, when summer comes in, we're all, you know, about to be outdoors and on the beach. So I think having similar to what we did for the body lotion, a body SPF that can not only protect but hydrate and also have the peptide to help repair some DNA damage. This is another area that we think that's very important that we are working on. And this should be coming up in the summer of this year. So that's very exciting. And then there are other areas associated with aging. We can't disclose yet, but it's probably, it's, this is more for next year. But it's also very exciting. Other things that affect ourselves women that are going to menopause that could be related, you know, to hair thinning or even other changes that happen.
Ooh, hair. Okay. Well, when that comes out and you're able to talk about it, yes. Let's get you back on the show because I want to talk about hair as well. Like yes. I have sort of made an unofficial goal of this year. Like I want the best skin of my life. I want the best hair of my life. Yeah. So I'm all in for all of that kind of stuff. The other sort of question, you know, as we've been talking, you've been very clear about the studies that like the R&D, the research and development that you and OneSkin have obviously put into formulating your products. And what I mean, first it's, you know, it's sort of a hat tip and a nod to you because what I often find in the skin industry, and maybe you can certainly speak to this more intelligently than I, is that there's, you know, you just seem to slap on the word Paris, you know, onto any product.
Yeah.
And they can sort of jump the price up and like there are products and, you know, I can say them, maybe you can't, but like I've seen products like La Mer, which is like $200 or more for a little bottle. And, and I've always wondered like, well, you know, you look at the back and you look at the ingredients and you're like, I don't know if this is going to do anything or if it's actually going to make my skin drier.
Yeah. Or worse.
Et cetera. Yeah. Yeah. So how do you balance that? How do you balance sort of the, maybe the word is integrity of wanting to be obviously a profitable company. Yeah. Now you are offering things, you know, it's a beat. It's like you're offering things to your consumers, but also keeping with the ethics and the integrity of like actually not, because there's so many times I've heard or I've read, you know, La Mer maybe or other examples where the product actually makes your skin, like it promises hydration, let's say, and it actually makes your skin drier over time, you know, or it's like it promises to renew cellular renewal and it actually slows down cellular renewal. So maybe you can talk to a little bit of that. Have you looked at any of these like competitors and their products and sort of what their claims are and how they stack up? And then, you know, the second question there is like, how do you balance the integrity and the marketing around being a research-driven company, but also wanting to be profitable in a very noisy space?
Yeah, I think that's a very important. And actually, when we started OneSkin, we didn't start out to create a product or a brand. We're initially testing products that were in the market to measure if they were actually able to promote any quantifiable, measurable rejuvenation effect. And we were very surprised on how some of the best selling and the most like luxurious products can actually be causing more damage than good to your skin. So because we can treat the skins in the lab, it's very clear for us when we look at the skins at the microscope to see how the cells are changing in a bad or in a positive way, which is a little harder for the consumer because sometimes you apply, okay, it feels good, but you don't know what's, you know, going on at the cellular level. And this was one of the main reasons that we felt compelled to really develop something that the main purpose was to improve the health of your skin. Because if we improve the health of your skin, the consequences that your skin is going to look better. But we would never bring something to the market that can make your skin look better, make you feel better, if you're compromising your skin health in the long term. So that's why we are very cautious, or we talk a lot about retinols and things like that that can compromise your skin the long term if you overuse, if you're over irritating your skin. But also some of those products that are claimed to be anti-aging, if they can have a very good active, if the whole formula has other toxic ingredients, in the end, you never have like a good effect in your skin. So you can feel good in the short term, but in the long term, you are probably, as you said, you know, decreasing cell renewal, even accelerating aging. So for us, the number one rule is that we are here to improve the health of your skin and your bodies, not only your face. We extensively test all the products that we develop in the skins in the lab. We make sure that all the markers, all the genes are going on the positive directions. We don't want to increase inflammation. We don't want to increase aging. And then we validate this in clinical studies. So we only bring something to the market if we have enough data showing that, okay, this is bringing a benefit to people's skin. We are improving their skin health. We're improving their skin barrier. That's worth like bringing to the market. I think this is in our hearts as a scientist, like we are scientists because we want to create impact in the world in a positive way. We are not here to, obviously, we want to build a profitable business, but I think this is a consequence of having good products. And this is so true that we've been in the market for the past 3 years, and we have this subscription option, and people have been subscribing with us, like for some people for 3 years, and the retention rates that we have, it's above the market because people are really seeing results. They are staying with us. They trust the science. They trust like the integrity of the business. And yeah, we wouldn't do anything otherwise. So that's kind of part of our philosophy as, you know, scientists. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we created this. We are about longevity. We're about empowering people to age better and really counteract the drawbacks of aging. We are just not here to kind of make you feel better without really delivering what we believe that's important for you.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I think I love the brand so much and I love what you're doing, because you speak to my scientist heart. And I think when you have that sort of rigor and that integrity, the success just follows that,
yeah,
right? It's just you can't help but be successful, because people are going to hear about it. Individuals like me are going to come across it, and then I'm going to tell my community about it because it's made a huge difference in my skin, or, you know, I start to get into the habit of using it. And then we have conversations like this that really move the needle. So, and I think quite frankly, so many women, I mean, I'm sort of tired of being lied to. Like,
yeah.
I'm sort of tired of being told this is going to make your skin, it's going to change your skin. And, you know, people are like, this was the best thing ever. And then you fork over money and you're like, this didn't do any, like, I know. Nothing.
Yeah.
So I think that the consumer is also becoming more wary and more intelligent as well. It's like, stop feeding me the lies. Like, show me the science.
Yeah.
Show me the data. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I think we know how challenge is really to make a change in the aging process, because we've been studying this for the past like 8 years at least. And all the companies that promise like, you know, immediate results, so, you know, you're going to completely transform, like, we don't make those claims. We believe that it's a process that it's an ongoing process that is cumulative. Like, if you want to change the makeup of your skin, it needs to be a very consistent process that you are treating your skin. Obviously, you know, from the outside with topical solutions, but obviously from the inside. And in the end, if you have like a healthy skin that you look at the mirror and you feel, oh, I feel like, you know, feel good about. It's not that you needed to completely be wrinkle free or, you know, completely. I think in the end, like, there is always that balance, like that natural aging that you feel good about, but you are not pursuing something that's unachievable, and that's, you know, what a lot of companies try to sell, and that's not, again, yeah, us.
Yeah, I love that. I love that as well, because I think aging is a privilege. I think we are all blessed to be here. I talk about this all the time. Like, it's a privilege to become a grandmother.
Yeah.
It's a privilege to see your children grow up. And we want to look as, sure, we want to put, yeah, our best face forward.
Of course.
Absolutely. And it's a privilege to age. So, yeah, I think running away from the process is not the way to go. So thank you so much for that. I really resonates with me as well. All right. So we will have clickable links in the show notes, but for people wanting to learn more about your product, plug where they can find it, plug where they can find you, and all the places on the internet where people can find out you and your work and your co-founder of OneSkin.
Yeah. On our website, you can go to oneskin.co. Subscribe to our newsletters. We share so much data around the research that we develop in the lab, about the clinical studies, about the longevity in general. We are very passionate about longevity as a whole. Also on Instagram, at oneskin.co as well, and LinkedIn and TikTok. We're just starting on TikTok, but it's always OneSkin, so you probably can find us very easily.
Wonderful. All right. This will all be clickable in the show notes. Carolina, thank you so much for your time today. This has been wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stephanie. It's been great. Yeah, thanks for having me again.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And I must give you the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer here. This podcast, Better with Dr. Stephanie, is for general information only. And the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship that has been formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. In other words, guys, be smart about this. Take it with a grain of salt. Take this information to your primary healthcare provider and have a discussion with him or her to make the best choice that is for you. Remember, I am a doctor, but I am not your doctor. And these conversations are meant for educational purposes only.